less than other countries in the world, but for cutting edge progress in pharmaceuticals, nobody does it like we do. Computers are kind of up for grabs. Certainly the Japanese do better in hardware. But when it comes to software, what you need is bright people to do these innovations.
Geek ingenuity.
Right. And that's done in garages by bright people. We have more bright people in garages, according to Ben Wattenberg, than any other country in the world. Mm-hmm. Higher education. Nobody does higher education for as many people as well as we do. Now, we have a tendency to compare our middle with their best, but if you take our best and compare it with the best in Japan, the best in Germany, our people hold their own superbly well. Higher education, and furthermore, we educate a higher percentage of people than any other people in the world. Now, people talk about high school, our students can't read, they don't know math, but in America, Americans learn things when they have to. So yeah. When they get out of the factory and the boss says to them, if you want to be lead man, you better learn how to write. He rushes back to a night class and he takes it. And the industry spends $50 billion a year on education. So, you know, the system of education that we have is the best in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can just, the list can go on.
Yes, I ran into, it's amazing, there's a man here who's one of the resident our project managers for San Diego State. I worked with him when I was at Hope Architects and Engineers. He's from England. And he's worked in England, and he's worked here. He says, in terms of construction, one-on-one, there's not a better builder in the world than an American.
Yeah. That's right.
And he's worked in Saudi. Mm-hmm. He's worked in, you know, he's dealt with a lot of international people.
Sure.
There's no one better.
Yeah.
And that's talking bottom line, blue collar worker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the auto industry, you can tell how you want to about Japan and Germany. Yeah, we got lax there in the 60s and 70s because we were dominating the market.
Mm-hmm.
Look at today.
Yeah.
They're scared.
Sure.
So, yeah. I see this. In doing these interviews, I've tried to take out to the students. We belong to one of the top institutions in the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get this party stereotype of this university. It's not true.
That's true. You're right.
Yeah, and it's one of the purpose, I think, of these of doing this history that I'm doing at San Diego State is to show this is a top-notch higher education institution.
First rate.
You betcha.
Very good.
When I graduated from high school, all my friends went to SC. I felt partly a lot of it was my fault. I didn't apply myself in school. I served.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I got stuck with San Diego State. That's how I felt. When I came back now, I'm 30 years old,
mm-hmm.
I look at what I'm getting here, and I couldn't have got it anyplace else.
Yeah, absolutely.
The faculty and staff at this university are not top rate. They're the prime cut.
That's great.
And they were when you started. A lot of them were Stanford, Harvard, Yale.
That's right. Graduate level faculty. That's right.
You know, I think it's important that we pass this on.
That's very good.
So, I don't know what... What do you suggest? How do you think we can change this? But this not happen. One thing I had was the community needs to realize that we're here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the community? Are you aware of what goes on this campus? Are you?
Not in intimate detail, no.
Not in intimate detail. Do you know the speakers that are coming?
No.
Would you be interested to hear Eric Foner speaking here?
Oh, sure.
Or Malcolm X's wife was here speaking. Did you know that?
No. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Do you feel the community needs to know that?
I think they do. That's kind of a problem that's pandemic in higher education, you know. I think that every campus, to a degree, deals with that. The man behind you there.
Yeah, he's a retired professor of history.
Yeah. What is his name?
I have no idea.
He was in the library.
He's retired. He's just kind of keeping himself busy.
He's a retired librarian, isn't he?
Yeah, historian.
Yeah.
He was a history. Yeah, he's retired, yeah.
Okay, but I thought he was head of the library.
He probably was at one time.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Yeah, I'm
blocking on his name, yeah. Well, you know, this is a problem in all of higher education. How do you market your what you are and how to get the public to know? But I think that as time goes on, the lines between the campus and the community are already in the process of dropping. You mentioned the unsavory side, the crime moving on the campus, but that's followed by other things moving on the campus. And I think that in the patience of half a century, that's probably not bad. And with it will go a greater appreciation of the kinds of things, cultural, intellectual things the campus offers.
I mean, the news media is, the only time the news media is here, when you have, during your time, was when you had to sit in. During my time, it's when they had this so-called wall up, but I'll be honest with you, as a student, I found it racist.
Mm-hmm.
It started out academic, but became racist.
Is that right?
I felt very, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was very racist, and rather the so-called people of color, I don't know what color I am if I'm not a person of color, was addressing to me. And I felt offended, but you know darn well I can't go put anything out there. And that's when I was glad when it came down.
Yeah.
But the news media, that's the only time we're here. Anyone here when Malcolm X's wife spoke, or Eric Foner, or Donald Kagan, or, you know, gee whiz.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to me.
Sure.
So, actually, I'm getting off the thing here.
Go right ahead.
No, I can stay on this thing. Okay. When you came back, this seems like a backward thing, but having gone through community colleges, I noticed you turned Grossmont College around. From president of University of Minnesota, of Massachusetts, was that it?
Southeastern Massachusetts University.
Okay, Southeastern.
Yeah.
You took a job here as the president of the Grossmont's
Chancellor of the district.
Chancellor of the district.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like you went down. It sounds like you went up, being chancellor.
Well, you know, you always balance in life a personal and a cultural agenda. And the cultural agenda says, hey, you should have retired with the flag at the top of the pole. You were 62 years old then. Why come out to a community college? That's going from the circus to the fair. That's not the way that the society says you should go. But for us, one, we had been there 11 years in Massachusetts, the place that really had come alive, and the Governor Dukakis and I were personal friends, and he had been reelected. The money was coming in, everybody was happy, and you want to quit while you're ahead.
Yeah, there you go.
And two, you know, you run out your time. These institutions need new leadership. So anyway, I took an early retirement. And we were hunting for something back in California, which is our home, in San Diego specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got we had two opportunities. One to go with the University of California system. I don't say that they had sent me a letter, but they did the week that we accepted here at San Diego. I got a call from the University of California central office saying, Dr. Warner, I am chairman of the search committee for the vice president for governmental relations for the University of California system, and I'm happy to tell you that you're on the short list. And I said, well, I'm glad to hear that. Tell me a little about the job. So they said, you mean you didn't know? I said, no one's troubling with that information. So anyway, what it essentially was a lobbyist for the University of California in Washington and Sacramento, heading up the lobbying office. And so we talked it over, and I told her that we had an offer that week from a community college in San Diego, which was our home. And we hadn't done that before. And my brother had been a community college instructor, so we were interested. New challenge. She said, oh, the committee will be very upset. Let me call you back. So she called back and she says, the committee wants me to tell you that if you withdraw, this is the University of California, at this stage, they would be very upset. Do you understand what I'm telling you? I said, yes, and that's fragrant, but we have other... Anyway, so we decided that Annie said, and if I couldn't be Don Walker, I'd want to be Annie Walker's second husband. Anyhow, she said, well, you've solved the status problem with intolerances. We've solved our retirement problem. What would you rather do? So I said, frankly, I'd rather be in San Diego on a campus. Let's do it. So we came here, and for us it was a great experience. We it was new, it was challenging, and fiscally rewarding. I don't know that it perhaps not as much at the University of California, but for us.
Yeah, I mean, you retired and it was a supplemental income.
Sure, that's right.
That's great. I you know, I'm a product of the Southwestern Community College under DeVore.
Ah.
And my mother's worked there for almost 20 years, and I think community college is great. In fact, my goal is to get my master's here, then go apply. It's a sad thing to say, I'm going to apply out of state. There's no way in the world I'm going to get a job in a community college in California.
Oh, I wouldn't be too sure.
I mean,
people come and go.
Yeah, they just got such a, it's just the education system right now. Well, who's to say in 3 years?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. But we're looking out of state. I mean, currently, that's what we're looking at because of the current situation.
Well, keep your lines out here, too.
Oh, you know, like my family's here.
Sure.
I mean, I got 4 generations of us living here. I got to take care of.
Sure.
That's the other thing. Is like, you know, if I, you know, if I move to the Midwest, at least I can buy a big piece of property. Put them on it, you know.
I understand.
But I wouldn't mind. I mean, the weather's here is great.
Sure.
Let's be honest. That's why everybody comes here.
Well, of course. Sure.
So, but I, you know, I think I was in the community colleges when you were chancellor, and the college, the district you go to was Grossmont. Mm-hmm. It was the innovative one. It was the one that was. A lot of them still go to it. A
lot of hybrid vigor and great teaching in community college.
Yes, you know, the mind you, Southwestern, I'm sorry to say, is we basically deal with a lot of Mexican nationals.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the population, mm-hmm. that's what they cater to.
Mm-hmm.
And you're further away from the border that you don't have that problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's just incredible. A lot of students here, when they can't get their classes, where do they go? Grossmont.
Sure. That's right.
You know, either Grossmont or Mesa.
That's it. And Grossmont and Cuyamac are good schools. It's first rate.
Yeah, I worked in Cuyamac when I was home.
Really?
Yes. With Dale, what was Dale's last name? Oh, shoot. You must have met with him. He was the designer of the gymnasium and library. Schweitzer, Dale Schweitzer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. I worked a lot with Dale Spikes.
I'll be darned. Very good. Very good.
So, well, let's see what else I got here.
Okay.
On the American dream of the crisis,
mm-hmm.
how did you know communism was going to fall?
Well, you know, these are some of that, of course, is just lucky guessing, but it seems to me that the trends were playing out. It seems to me that the heart of my philosophy is that this business of shared governance, that in intellectual communities, and by the way, industry is picking this up now,
yeah.
that all of us are smarter than any of us. That's deep in the Western tradition. And so my father was a professor, and his father before him was a professor. So I knew how these places didn't work,
yeah.
even though I wasn't sure how they worked. But over the years, this business of getting everybody into the act, and still getting things done was kind of the thrust. And I'll bring you a copy of that book.
All right.
And drop it off for you.
All right.
You ought to read at least the...
I've gotten the bad habit of reading books from cover to cover.
Good
recently.
For you. Good for you.
Yeah, well, it doesn't help me scholastically because I spend all my time reading and I need to get them done. Because you wrote this article in 1964.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And it says here...
And that was sort of the period of a paper that I gave here.
Yeah, it was from it was when you gave this to the Institute of World Affairs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I didn't want to highlight this because this goes into the special collection, so it made it difficult. But you were it's talking about the same thing we were talking about before, the loss of the dream, that we were you predicted this in 64.
Mm-hmm.
The changes in the social structure.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it happening there.
Mm-hmm.
A greater influx of a non-skilled.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before the PCs.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it. How did you do that? I mean, I'm trying to write a paper, a whole different new prospectus,
mm-hmm.
on the Roman Republic.
Mm, very good.
But it's difficult because I'm trying to come up with a new idea.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been so much stuff written.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just the time? Was it the times that made you so that you could do this, or was it your education in sociology that helped you see how society was going?
Yeah, probably a combination. picking a good father and grandfather, you know how those things go.
Yeah, well, I've got that. Mm-hmm. I got that going. Well, it just amazed me. I'm reading this stuff, I'm just going, wow. Mm-hmm. This guy, you knew. Mm-hmm. Well, at least you thought you knew. And then all of a sudden, what do you think when you saw it happen? What did you feel when you saw the things that you had said all of a sudden coming true?
Well, it gives you a feeling that you were right. It's like predicting a hurricane in some ways. You're not any happier with a hurricane because you predicted it.
Yeah.
At least you can get some preparing done. So there are always a lot of bright people around.
Yeah.
If you talk with them. Why,
That's another thing. That's, when you were on this campus, you communicated with the students. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's an important aspect of being a vice president or president of the university?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that's critical. You can get out of touch so easily. And, you know, it's just like an industry. If you forget who your customers are.
Did you keep this up when you were at the Southeastern Massachusetts?
Oh, sure. Sure. I always had people in my office throwing up on me.
Oh, I hope not, but understand. It seems to be lacking these days.
I think times are a little more Teutonic. And see, in a free society, the way you, the best explanation of how the society moves is the pendulum. We move from one extreme to the other. And so now there's a little bit of an antidote to the 60s and 70s.
Yes.
And the pendulum is over on the other side. It'll swing back again.
I think it's starting to.
Yeah.
There was a riot in Los Angeles. Was a spark.
That's right. That's right. So, but in a free society, you can change your set of regrets from time to time. And Hegel was right.
Hegel was right.
Yeah. Social change occurs in these institutions. Someone states a strong thesis.
Yes.
And that calls out a strong antithesis.
Which, if
it's working right, results in a synthesis. Which becomes another thesis that calls out another antithesis. So,
yeah, I know. That's so confusing. I mean, it is. It's so simple.
And that's the way that the society is changing. That's what we're observing. We're observing the pendulum go back and forth.
Did you have any children?
Yes.
Are they teachers now?
We just have one son.
Uh-huh.
And he's an unusual guy. He took his bachelor's degree at American University in Beirut, came back fluent in Arabic, and went with the State Department briefly, has a graduate year at Georgetown, a graduate year at Harvard. Went with the Central Intelligence Agency for a period of time and played spook, was a federal narc for a period of time. And now he's in the intelligence division of the Sheriff's Department.
In San Diego?
In San Diego.
Wow.
He left Central Intelligence trying to save his marriage. He was one of the specialists in the world in special operations and was never home. So his marriage was falling apart. So he tried to save his marriage while he quit and came back and worked for the district attorney and then eventually got into police work, which he says, you know, in an imperfect world is the closest that he can get, and he does some writing and things of that sort, so he's doing well.
Okay, now I'm gonna switch gears here, because this is something I'm interested in.
All right.
You were a pastor of a Methodist church.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's Needus, right?
Right, right up the way.
Why?
Well, my father, I think, always felt that he should have been a clergyman.
Uh-huh.
And so my brother and I, he always was talking to what could be done in the ministry and so forth. So we just kind of began to assume about the second year in college that this would be a good thing. And I thought I would probably take training and then be a chaplain, because mm-hmm. World War II was heating up and so forth. And the war ended before I finished. But I thought that I went into the ministry without any particular misgivings. My brother went into it with grave misgivings.
Like, what do you mean by that?
Whether that was where one wanted to make one's contribution, one could. My brother stayed in it 20 years, and then before he went into education, and I stayed in it a couple of years. I had more than that. I was an associate pastor down in the Tenderloin of Los Angeles before that. For a year when I was in school, Hugh Beaumont, the father of Leave It to Beaver.
Hugh Beaumont was he was an ordained Presbyterian.
Yeah, we were. I worked for Hugh.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So anyhow, I thought that I was going to go out and change the world. After about a year, a couple of years in the ministry, I said, I think I really belong in academic life. Yeah. So we went back to Stanford and took some more graduate work.
Where did you get, did you have any seminary training at all?
No seminary training. I went to a graduate school of religion at USC. In those days, they had a graduate school of religion at USC. Tremendous faculty. Mm-hmm. And so I took my work at USC.
Oh, I see. Okay, I was going to say, did you go to Fuller?
What?
I was going to say, did you go to Fuller Seminary?
No.
You didn't go to seminary school.
No.
Are you still active in it?
No, I found that you can't mix the ministry. When I was first a young professor, a lot of students wanted me to marry them. And I found that that mixing of the roles, I had a couple of students denounce me one time because I gave them the grade that they had earned after many, many warnings. And they thought that I had somehow violated my religious vows by holding them to a standard. I said, whatever gave me the idea that Christians didn't have standards? Anyhow, so I thought, this is crazy time.
Okay.
Just going to leave that alone. So
it was the times that caused, they were changing.
Yes.
Bob Dylan.
Yes.
What did your brother say was in for 20 years?
Uh-huh.
Where was he? Was he a missionary or?
No, he was a congregational minister up in Ontario, California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
20 years. Wow. Mm-hmm. So, and now he's a professor? Or he's probably retired now.
Yeah, he retired, and then he passed away.
Oh,
he had some health problems.
Where did he teach at?
Chaffey College.
Yeah, I know where Chaffey's at.
Yeah.
That's good. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He worked a lot in Pomona. All right. did you find, like you said that it caused a conflict, but did you find that your Christianity helped you in terms of education?
I think that the basic idealism and the basic hospitality to the first class questions in life are very important in higher education. And I don't mean from an ideological point of view, I just mean that kind of absorption, that kind of interest, that kind of responsibility.
Discipline, don't you think? Would you say it's also about discipline?
Yeah, discipline. Yeah.
Because I've seen it, I feel that that's how I'm succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of that discipline.
Is that right?
That I'm able to do it. Even I have a wife and three kids.
Uh-huh.
Plus, I'm a full-time student.
Uh-huh.
And I think that it's because of that I have some sense of training, not training, dedication.
Very good.
Dedication to where I should go.
Commit. Sure.
Yeah, and the questions that are asked in the classroom, pertaining to history especially, I've been studying history of 2,000 years ago my whole life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, mm-hmm. It was a special time and place there, and
sure.
it hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. And everything I've read in that book, I still find. And as a sociologist and psychologist, I think you can agree.
Sure.
The human problem is always in there.
Sure.
And it's addressed all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the younger students don't understand how I know these answers. Even though I haven't read the book, how come you know that? Well, it's just because.
Sure.
I mean, because I got to be honest, when I read the part where you were a Methodist minister, I became prejudiced. I probably did, as all people do in the interpret thing.
Sure.
I saw your foresight. I think it was part of your foresight.
That's interesting.
It was a little thing on my part. I don't know. But anyway, that's it. I might be calling you again because I'm going to do some more research on you.
That's fine. And what I'll do is I'll scratch around somewhere.